Morning. So last week, Ben Conley talked about power and control, and I just want to talk a little bit more today about those. He talked about releasing the need to control so that we can power ourselves. And that's what I want to talk a little bit more about today. So, a lot of us who come to Zen practice, who do Zen practice, feel some inadequacy. Feel that we're not good enough, we're not strong enough, we're not calm enough. And we kind of fall into a trance of inadequacy. Religion's answer to that, most religion, and I think it's a good answer, it's not an answer that I'm dissing at all, is to surrender to a higher power. Surrender our small self to a higher power. Most religion is based on, there are two Japanese words, one is called tariki and the other is called jiriki. Tariki means other power, jiriki means self-power. And most religion is based on tariki. You surrender. You become humble. You give yourself away. You, as we do prostrations. But Zen is also the jiriki school of Buddhism. It's the self-power school of Buddhism. And that makes it a little unique. So Buddha said, supposedly, be a lamp unto yourself. Take yourself to no external refuge. Self-power. Be a refuge to yourself. And in meditation, what do we have? We've got a blank wall or the back of someone else's head and ourselves. It's settling into just being with what is. It's not. Nobody is going to save us. We can give ourselves away all we want. And even though that's the case, most of Buddhism actually is tariki. Most of it is devotional, which is wonderful, and we do devotional stuff here in the morning. But Buddhas and Bodhisattvas, Amitabha Buddha, Buddha in the Lotus Sutra, these are omnipotent, omniscient beings that in most of Buddhism, if popular Buddhism, if you go to Asia, and this is, I've never been to Asia, but this is what my friends tell me, it's mostly tariki, except in the monasteries, where they do sitting. The lay people do not do sitting. So with settling into ourselves, just in our sitting practice, just in our meditation practice, we have the possibility to discover that we can be find our refuge right here. And we can move from small, needy self, inadequate self, to big self. And supposedly when Buddha had his enlightenment experience, after doing a lot of jiriki practice, sitting by himself, day after day, he said, only I, alone and sacred. That's big self. Only I, alone and sacred, including everything. That was his realization. Now, you know, there are many different versions of what he said, but that's the version my Japanese teachers used to like. Only I, alone and sacred. Referred to in literature, in Buddhist literature, as the bright light of awareness that he saw when he saw the morning star. The morning star rose, and his seeing was freeing. It was enlightenment. It was light. It was illumination. And this light is referred to as mirror mind in Zen, mirror mind, which I've talked about. But today, I'm going to read something from, I think it's the 8th century, a monk, Fatsang, and the Empress Wu. And the Empress Wu was not a meditator, because remember, not very many lay people meditated, but she wanted to know about this practice, and what the self-power was all about. So she went to Fatsang, and Fatsang did this, supposedly, according to the scripture, Chinese scripture. Fatsang constructed a hall of mirrors, placing mirrors on the ceiling, floor, four walls, and four corners of a room. In the center, he placed a Buddha image with a lamp next to it. Standing in this room, the Empress could see that the reflection in any one mirror clearly reflected the reflections from all of the other mirrors, including the specific reflections of the Buddha image in each one. This fully demonstrated that within each one contained all, and with all contained each one. So, referred to as mirror mind, self-power, which shines through our fear, shines through our anger, shines through our anxiety with luminosity. Our shame, our loneliness, our confusion with luminosity. We don't need to get somewhere to change. We just need to open up to what we are, to what is. Because at base we're luminous beings, able to see and experience each emotion, each thought as waves on an ocean of being. In the 10th century, Yumen said to his monks, "Each of you has your own light. If you try and see it, everything is darkness. What is this light?" Hearing no reply, he exclaimed, "The kitchen and the gate." So, we have this power within us. We have this light within us. We don't need to control to feel good. There's a poem by Mary Oliver that I tried to put in my last book, but I couldn't get permission from her to do that. Maybe not. She's passed on now. Maybe I could get permission now, but I couldn't. You do not have to be good. You do not have to walk on your knees for 100 miles through the desert repenting. You only have to let the soft animal of your body love what it loves. Tell me about despair, yours, and I will tell you mine. Meanwhile, the world goes on. Meanwhile, the sun and the clear pebbles of the rain are moving across the landscapes, over the prairies and deep trees, the mountains and the rivers. Meanwhile, the wild geese, high in the clean blue air, are heading home again. Whoever you are, no matter how lonely, the world offers itself to your imagination, calls to you like the wild geese, harsh and exciting, over and over, announcing your place in the family of things. Our place in the family of things. Our place, just as we are. Just as we are. And the more we try to control things on the outside, the more we try to get away from things as they are, the more our light dims. Our light dims. We can't control the kind of movie that's playing in our minds. We can't control the storm that's appearing in Lake Bede Makuska. So many things are beyond our control. Aging, sickness, dying, other people acting in ways we don't like. I wish people would quit acting in ways we don't like. Shouldn't they just cut it out? beyond our control. Our own moods and emotions beyond our control. When the habit of controlling takes over, we forget our own luminosity. We forget that even a huge wave won't kill us. We can ride it, or we can dive under it. It might roll us for a while, but it's okay. It's okay. We don't need to be damaged by it. It's just a wave. This luminous Buddha nature, if you want to call it Buddha nature, you don't even need to say that. This luminosity is always here. Dogen says, while there is a body now, a mind now, there are one bright pearl. That stalk of grass, this tree, is not a stalk of grass, is not a tree. The mountains and rivers of this world are not the mountains and rivers of this world. There are one bright pearl. This one bright pearl includes the whole universe within it. So in our Zen practice, we just sit with a piece of sand in us, on maybe another piece of sand, and three or four pieces of sand. I know we'd like to get those pieces of sand out. They're yucky. But we just sit. We're just here. We don't know. We're just doing it. We're just breathing. And what happens? Little by little, the sand transforms into one bright pearl. Because that's its nature. It has a pearl nature to do that. If we mess with it, it doesn't transform. But if we don't do anything, if we do nothing but just be here, it happens. It happens. But usually we're so upset that we want to control. We're so anxious that we want to control. So four ways that we control. I just made these up, so don't necessarily believe that they're from some gospel. Four ways. We frame or present things in a certain way to get a certain response. How often do we do that? Because we want control. We withdraw from others. How often do we do that? Because we want control. We withdraw from ourselves. How often do we do that? Because we want control. We worry and obsess. Worry and obsess is a way of controlling. Way of controlling. So I'll talk a little about each of these four, because these four tamp down our natural jiriki, our natural power just to be alive. We frame or present things in a certain way to get a certain response. So many years ago, when I was a young man, and I'd been practicing Zen for not very long, I went to my teacher and told him I wanted to become a priest. I wanted to be ordained. And you know why I wanted to do it? Many, many years ago. Because I wanted to be accepted. I had left my other community and I wanted to be accepted in this community. I wanted to have a place in the world, in this community. I wanted to be well thought of. That's not bad. That's not bad. That's why we do lots of things. But I was trying to get control. And my teacher didn't say much to me except he said, "Well, you're too young and I'm too old." And I was pretty young and he was really old. Although he was about 10 years younger than I am now. But back then that was really old. And the controller does that. We do that. Because we feel ill at ease, not okay. Also, we withdraw from others. Somebody says something to it that disses us a little bit. She treated me this way. I'm not going to... I see her in coffee hour, but I'm going to stay out of that room where she's in. I'm just going to hang out in this room. If she comes in that room, I'm out of here. I'm out of here. Right? Right? We do that. We do that. We do that. We don't want to feel confusion and fear, even guilt. But in Jiriki, we try to engage whenever possible. Now, we don't overdo this if the relationship is toxic, if the verse is toxic, but give it a chance. Give it a chance. You might discover that if you really engage, there's something there that you're missing. And we withdraw from ourselves. The third one, we withdraw from ourselves. I don't want to feel this confusion and fear and guilt of yet another school shooting or another police shooting. I'm not going to watch TV. I'm not going to read the papers. If somebody brings it up, I'm going to change the subject. I don't want to feel this pain. Who does? Who does? But can we quietly and non-judgmentally just engage with our fear? With our anger, with our anxiety, and maybe do something actively to try to change things a little bit, a little bit. Sand in the oyster that creates the pearl. The sand in the oyster that creates a pearl. Instead of trying to control, engage, we withdraw from others or ourselves. Problem with engagement often is that we don't know what's going to happen. Withdrawing and getting enmeshed, we're pretty safe, but when we engage, we don't know. But what about don't know? What about don't know? Is don't know pretty good? How would it be if we approach ourselves, the situation, other people, with don't know? Don't know mind. Feel it. I don't know. I don't know if my reaching out to you after I feel like you dissed me is going to work. I don't know. But I'm going to try. I'm going to try. I'm not sure. I'm going to engage with openness. I'm going to practice don't know until I have some comfort resting in uncertainty. I mean, what is certain? We think things are certain, but nothing is certain until we can do our best and just say, I don't know. Laugh and say, I don't know. Cry and say, I don't know. Be confused and say, I don't know. And engage. That's where openness is. That's where opportunity is. That's where our life is. Then we don't need to hide from ourselves or others. And we're tapping into self-power. Jiriki. Big self. And the last kind of thing, last thing we do is we worry and obsess. We worry and obsess. We get locked into an inhabit, a tight, small place. Worry on. And lose sight of self-power. Right here, self-power. To breathe. To feel my sensations. To notice the feelings. And to feel it all. So now I want to read a long thing from the Right Stuff by Tom Wolfe. Some of you may remember The Right Stuff by Tom Wolfe. Tom Wolfe describes how in the 1950s a few highly trained pilots were attempting to fly at altitudes higher than had ever been achieved. The first pilots to face this challenge responded by frantically trying to stabilize their planes when they went out of control. They would apply correction after correction, yet because they were way out of the Earth's atmosphere, the rules of thermodynamics no longer applied, so the planes just went crazy. The more furiously they manipulated the controls, the wilder the rides became. Screaming helplessly to ground control, "What do I do next?" the pilots would plunge to their deaths. This tragic drama occurred several times until one of the pilots, Chuck Yeager, inadvertently struck upon a solution. When his plane began to tumble, Yeager was thrown violently around in the cockpit and knocked out. Unconsciously, he plummeted toward Earth. 7 miles later, the plane re-entered the planet's denser atmosphere where standard navigation strategies could be implemented. He steadied the craft and landed. In doing so, he had discovered the only life-saving response that was possible in this desperate situation. Don't do anything. Take your hands off the controls. Jiriki. Your Jiriki, your self-power, your big self-power, is hidden inside, hidden in your heart, waiting to be uncovered, waiting. Sometimes by something someone says, sometimes through your own sorrow, if you're just with it, tapping into your big heart mind. Your big heart mind. Dogen calls this your grandmother mind. Your grandmother mind. My grandkids just left. They were with us for 7 weeks, and my daughter was here too. And it was wonderful. But I know I'm getting a little bit of rest. boys, not girls, not, you know, boys, right? I watched my daughter with them, being the best mother she could. And mostly what she was doing, I mean, she was doing a lot of TLC, but mostly she was controlling sugar intake and screen intake. Screens and sugar. And the more they do sugar, the more they need to do screens. The more screens they do, the more they need sugar. So they would figure out any way to get screens and sugar. My grandsons. And they were pretty good at it. I saw they outsmarted Aaron a lot of the time. But grandfather just got to sit back and watch and be there for them. And grandmother didn't sit in this detached way. She was just there for them, hugging them, loving them, reassuring them, helping them feel safe. Grandfather wanted to be like grandmother, but he didn't quite know how. Dogen talks a lot about grandmotherly mind, big mind, Jiriki, grandmotherly mind. Can we tap into that? Our very own grandmotherly mind? You may have a memory of a grandmother. Maybe you lucked out and you had a grandmother like that. You can just call her in now. Grandma, just call her in. And maybe you didn't, but you still got grandmotherly mind. You still got it. In a class I taught this past year, I went through this series. I'm going to go through it quickly. I had folks take a moment to bring into their minds something in their lives they were having difficulty controlling. I had them then pay attention to the thoughts that came up about this without judging or comparing. And of course, I had them breathe. I had them notice a feeling or emotion that was associated with these thoughts and fully be with that feeling. I had them pay attention to the sensations in their bodies that were tied to that emotion. Then, I had them imagine just taking their hands off the controls a little. Just a little, not too much. Because if you try to do it too much, you'll fail, and then you'll get pissed at yourself. And, you know, you'll get into some kind of a mental set. And then I had them notice what feeling is underneath. Anxiety, fear, anger. And bring a hand to their hearts. Breathe with it. And offer kindness to that anxiety, to that fear, to that anger. Each time we let go, it becomes easier and easier to feel a wonderful aliveness that's always here. A warm spaciousness. The luminosity of one bright pearl. Of grandmotherly mind. Grandmotherly mind. Within grandmotherly mind, there's space to open up both the school shooting victims and those who attack them and even to the NRA leaders, as well as our own fears, our own anxieties about guns in this country. When I'm visiting my daughter and lives in France every year, the French people just look at me and they shake their heads. I think I'm wearing a holster or something. I don't even see guns, but they said, "What are you doing?" They asked me, "What are you doing?" "Moi? Moi? I don't have any guns," but that's what they think. "What are we doing? What are we doing?" But we can discover a self-power here so we don't need to hurt each other. We don't need to protect ourselves from each other. We just protect ourselves from each other by being with this. Just being with this. Letting go of the need to control. I mean, think of that person who has an arsenal of guns. How afraid they are, how scared they are, how paranoid they are. And you can remember being that scared and that paranoid yourself. Maybe not. Maybe you didn't get an arsenal of guns, but an arsenal of words, you know. A huge arsenal of words till you saw that person next, over and over again, rehearsing it. You did that. We all have done that. And this is a different way. A different way. William Stafford, the poet, says, "It could happen any time. Tornado, earthquake, Armageddon, it could happen. Or sunshine, love, salvation, it could, you know. That's why we wake and look out. No guarantee in this life, but some bonuses, like morning, like right now, like moon, like evening." He's like a Zen guy, doesn't he? All these poets, so many of these poets, I think, oh gee, have they been doing Zazen for their whole lives? Maybe so. Maybe a different kind. I don't know. Be fully, he's telling us, with what's here. And we'll respond with some little bit of wisdom. Be fully. We're ready for anything. Ready for big waves or small waves. Ready to open to our losses, our pains, to the depths of our sorrow, our lost loves, our lost youth, our lost eyesight, our lost hearing. You guys are not to that stage yet. Mom was... Between my wife and I, we make up one person. We're both 76. And I can't hear, but I can see. She can't see, but she can hear. Wait till this happens to you, you guys. An opportunity to practice. and still settle in to Jiriki. It's always here. It's always here. Self-power. Grandmother mine. She's here. When our hearts are open, we care about others. We extend our heart naturally to each black male who is afraid when he sees a cop, and each cop who is afraid when he sees a black male, and each NRA member who feels afraid to live without an arsenal. Ready for anything. To be ourselves. To work hard together. To play. To love with every fiber. To succeed, to fail, to succeed, to fail, to succeed, to fail, to succeed. Quiet confidence of self-power. Jiriki. Woman said to his monks, "Each of you has your own light. If you try and see it, everything is darkness. What is this light?" Hearing no reply, he exclaimed, "The kitchen and the gate." the kitchen and the gate, the basin and the toilet, the backyard and the lake. Ready for anything. Beauty, poetry, sadness, happiness, mystery, all around. And we fall in love over and over. Fall in love over and over. And some gratitude comes up from that. Some gratitude. We don't know where it comes. It must come from Jiriki. Must come from Grandmother Liman. It just comes up. Gratitude to be walking. Gratitude to be drinking a cup of water. Gratitude to be sitting. Pouring forth from the luminosity that all life is bathed in. Through the kitchen and the gate. The backyard and the lake. So that's what I want to say this morning. Yeah. I'll be glad to entertain any questions or comments that anybody has. Questions, comments? Lawrence.
Could you say a little bit about the first part of this quotation? Each of you has your own light. If you try and see it, everything is darkness.
Well, this is sort of a paradox in Zen, isn't it? We each have our own light, and we sit down, we sit on the cushion, and we sit day after day, and we sit retreats, and sometimes we feel we experience light, but a lot of the time, we don't get it, and we want it. We're trying to get it, and the paradox is that the more we try to get it, the more we miss that it's already here. So that's why sitting can be, actually meditation can be very discouraging. Because all you've got is the wall. Now you can come here and chant and that can help you. That's other power to do some tariki, do chanting, give yourself away to Buddhas and Bodhisattvas. That's great. That's wonderful. But when the chanting's done, you're still stuck just with you and the wall, and you want something. And that wanting is covering over the light that's just emanating. It's just emanating. Always. Always.
Would you say that it's trying to grasp the light, perhaps?
Oh, you could say that. I could say that, trying to grasp it, sure. Sure. And we all do it, so it's just this catch-22 of human existence and Zen practice. But the more we can just be with what is, the less we need to do it. And the more we can be with what is, the more we experience luminosity in the middle of suffering. Yeah.
That makes me think a little bit about an experience I had once where I was in a conversation about how something should be done, politically speaking. And the person I was talking with was saying to me about a group that I was part of. She said, "You think you have all the light, but you don't. You don't know, whatever." But I thought, that's exactly it. As soon as you think you have the light,
You don't have it. That's right. That's right. That's why don't know mind is very healthy. We don't like it, but once we get to know it, it's very healthy. And that's where luminosity comes, just from, I don't know, but I'm here. I'm doing my best just to be here with you. Just to be here. Just to listen and be authentic. Whatever that means. I don't know what it means. I don't know. I don't need to know. Anybody else? Yeah. Oh.
I like what you're saying about kind of being that way for your grandson.
Uh-huh.
You didn't No, but you're just there.
Yeah.
You don't have to be the mom.
Yeah.
You know, making those,
yeah.
those clear-cut decisions for them.
Yeah.
They can have sugar.
Yeah.
It reminds me, I was fortunate enough to receive this proclamation from my 20-year-old who came and said, and I find that hard as a parent, a 20-year-old who's an adult and yet not fully brained.
Yeah.
And so, it's just this balance of like, I don't know mine, like support. I don't know what you should do with your life, and yet, yet trying to be supportive.
Uh-huh.
He comes to me with questions, and he walked in yesterday and said, he asked for a hug, and he said, I've stopped hating you. I really love and admire you now. I've been saying this to people I work with and my friends. I'm like, it's like you've allowed me to be me, and yet you're supportive when I'm there. Yet you're not overbearing.
Oh.
I said, well, I don't know. I don't know them, but I've been doing my best.
Good. Wonderful. And you were in a receptive enough mood that you were able to just take that in, and you didn't go down the road of stop hating me, or what do you mean after all I did for you. You were able just to be there, even though you may have felt that a little bit.
Sure.
You were able just to be there. Good, thank you. Yes, parents can do this too. But grandparents have got it easy. We got it easy. Other people? Okay, thank you.